Today, answers matter more than ever before. That's why IBM is helping businesses manage customer questions with Watson Assistant. It's conversational AI designed to work for any industry. Let's put smart to work. Visit ibm.com/watsonassistant.
This is DiPietro, Canty, and Rothenberg.
It is a Friday. We're in the midst of the NFL draft, round one. Of course, we got to watch and isolate it, and it was, I don't know, guys, I thought it was wonderful. We'll get to the Jets and the Giants in just a moment, but Chris, just having football and seeing Goodell and watching the guys celebrate at home, I really enjoyed last night, just from a pure football perspective.
Now, Dave, does this count as a football Friday?
Yes.
Okay. I was just checking. I mean, typically we only get that in the fall, but because it's the NFL draft and there's really nothing else going on, I think we should just go ahead and tab this as a football Friday officially.
I think you make a good point. I think it is a football Friday. And, I thought there was something really fun about last night. It's been so long since we've had, and I enjoyed The Last Dance, and we all did, and we dissected it. It was really well done. And I look forward to episodes 3 and 4 this Sunday night, but this was the closest we've had to sports, to competition, to not knowing what's going to happen in 6 weeks. Honestly, I'm being sincere, Chris, this was the most I've enjoyed a draft ever just because I'm so needy for sports right now.
Well, I mean, listen, we talked about it going in, right? Because there was nothing else going on. This is actually something that you can look at, and it gives you a little bit of a glimpse into what we can expect when NFL season actually resumes, when we actually get to see football on the field. So this provides a little bit of a hope in terms of us getting back to some normalcy, and a big part of our way of life is being able to watch live sports. So yeah, we knew that we were going to be, you know, entertained for the 3.5 hours that the draft was on. But I mean, last night's draft was relatively uneventful. You know, I thought that we would see a lot more movement from teams, especially in the top half of the first round, and it just didn't play out that way. I think a lot of people were trying to feel their way out, and you saw some trades happen once we got into the second half of the first round. But it was a relatively quiet night in terms of fireworks at the top.
Yeah, we thought there might be a lot of deals. We made our projections. We'll get into that a little bit later. But there were not a ton of deals, especially in the top 10. There were no deals. And, Rick, why do I feel like your house and the Vrabel house might have a lot of similarities going on?
Very similar. I mean, what you saw in the background is pretty much how I spend most of my mornings. I mean, that's pretty much where I get a lot of my work done. So I wouldn't have been, I mean, if I was at Vrabel's house, that's probably where I would have been. It was exactly where that guy was sitting on the toilet.
That was wonderful. I mean,
school
Belichick,
toilet, whatever it was.
Belichick looked like he was coming out of a 1975 TV show.
Well, that's his Nantucket home. That's where he resides in the off season.
I know, but
understated.
I'll tell you what's not understated.
Jerry Jones mega yacht. Oh, that's not understated at all.
No, prestige worldwide. I mean, he's like an evil villain making his picks in his yacht. I'll tell you what. I mean, we'll go through the teams and what San Francisco did and the winners and losers and everything else. The biggest winner of last night, I'm telling you right now, Cliff Kingsbury's sex life. I mean, what he's working with in Arizona. Not only did they get Isaiah Simmons, did you see where he was set up?
Yeah, it was unbelievable. It looked like a movie set. But here's the thing, though. We'll get into the Jets and Giants in a second.
Like 50 Shades of Grey.
Yeah, absolutely. 800-919-3776. But here's the thing, and this is why I'm not sure how legitimate. Obviously, it's a beautiful home. They said it was 97 degrees yesterday in Arizona. He's got the fire going outside.
Ambiance, Dave. It's all about ambiance.
That's what it's about?
Yes, sir.
Okay.
Set the mood.
Well, Dave. I'm guaranteeing well. Right now there was a naked woman in his bed. I promise you that.
and if she wasn't, she was about to be.
Well, all right. So let's get through it. And I have some strong statements. Now, Giants make their pick, and we had said offensive line is the way that we think the Giants should go. We all agreed with that. And, you know, we thought Wirfs or Wills would probably be the guy. Didn't think it would be Becton. We weren't sure about Thomas. But this vitriol surrounding the Giants and what they did last night, we'll start with you, Rick. I don't understand. I mean, they rated him as the top offensive lineman in the draft. They love him. And for people to flip out about it, I just think is really unfair.
Yeah, it's unfair. Here's what I do like, and I think this is what Giants fans and even Jets fans should appreciate, is the fact that not one person that covers the Giants, I think we all realized, or we all hoped at least, that it would be an offensive lineman, it would be a tackle. The fact that it never leaked out that Andrew Thomas was going to be the guy, that, I mean, and listen, Jordan Renan, I mean, between his, you know, his contacts and everything else, he was convinced it was going to be Wirfs or Wills. So the fact that they kept it quiet, I think that says something about, you know, how this team is going to be run in the influence of having Joe Judge now.
And this was really the first time that Dave Gettleman has kept the secret about what he wanted to do with his first pick. A couple of years ago when they were drafting Saquon Barkley, like, you knew that they were probably leaning toward Barkley because of how Dave Gettleman waxed poetically about him in the pre-draft process. Same thing with Daniel Jones. After he saw him at the Senior Bowl, he was full-blown love. So, I mean, this was the first time when you really didn't hear anything about what direction Dave Gettleman was potentially going to go in. But as far as the player is concerned, I don't understand why anybody would be negative about the pick. We identified offensive tackle as the biggest position of need just because it's what's most important to the organization. The development of Daniel Jones, making sure that he gets his pro career on track, is the most important thing for the Giants right now. And so this pick signals that the Giants understand that, which gives me a little bit of confidence in what the organization is trying to do moving forward.
You know what it felt like? It felt like, and Dave, I texted you this last night. I mean, it was like when your parents take you out for dessert and they tell you, okay, you're going to have ice cream. Like, the choice is ice cream. Now you just get to pick your favorite flavor. And for the Jets, it was Becton. And for the Giants, it was Thomas. I think the real interesting thing is it feels like, I mean, with what you've seen from Andrew Thomas, I mean, they clearly, I mean, left tackle is what they want. They want to protect Daniel Jones's blind side. He's got the most experience there. He's got, I mean, from everything you heard and read, he's got the highest floor. And then with Becton, it seems like there are some questions with the, you know, flag drug test and, you know, the weight and everything else. But
not to mention what his girl put on Instagram last night. We'll get into that later.
Yeah, which wasn't great. But, I mean, he's got the highest ceiling. So it's almost like, you know, opposite ends of the spectrum. Highest floor and, you know, taking a bit of another, I wouldn't say a risk. I mean, there was the four offensive linemen. I probably would have rathered Wills, but that's just me. But at his size and the fact that Joe Douglas comes from Baltimore and Philadelphia, we probably should have connected the dots when you start looking at the size of their left tackle. I mean, between Peters, Jonathan Ogden, I mean, they're big physical guys.
The big offensive lineman, yeah.
And this dude's humongous. I mean, you're talking about a guy who's 6'7", who ran a 5'1" in the 40. So he's a freakish athlete, too.
Freakish athlete, yeah. And let's line up the phone calls, get your reactions to it. 800-919-3776. George Renan at 11, Rich Cimini at 12. So we'll break down from each side of things. But Chris, Here's the way I take it. People are so frustrated with the Giants, and you know I am as well, and I was freaking out about getting nervous about Derek Brown and all these things. I just think if you're the person, and there's a lot of people, and you saw it on social media yesterday, and people were texting me right away how unhappy they are. If you're that person that the Giants take what they deem to be, and it's not like they're on an island here. We've had plenty of people tell us. I mean, Renan said he wouldn't be surprised if they took Thomas. Mike Tenenbaum said he's absolutely his favorite of the offensive linemen. Schefter tweeted last night that there's a groundswell of people around the NFL that think he's absolutely terrific. So if you're of the mindset, and most of the people that are going to critique it and analyze it don't even know exactly what they're talking about, but if you're of that mindset, I think it's more because of what the Giants have done in the past than how you feel about this actual selection.
Well, I think it's more about what they're hearing in the pre-draft process, Dave, and what all the scouts are talking about, whether it's Daniel Jeremiah or Lewis Riddick, whatever those individuals are putting out there, that's what people that are fans of the Jets and the Giants are using to formulate their opinions of it. So, I mean, they're not watching all of the games of these offensive tackles, so they don't know. But they're basing their opinion off of what they're hearing. And all you've heard in the pre-draft process was buzz about Tristan Wirfs, about Jedrick Wills, and about Mekhi Becton and how he ran a 5-1 at the combine. You really hadn't heard a lot of fanfare for Andrew Thomas, but what he is a solid football player. I mean, you're talking about a guy that was a 3-year starter in the SEC. He's got experience at right tackle, but played more games at left tackle. Last night, the SEC set a conference record for number of players drafted in the first round. It was 15 players. The SEC is basically a developmental league for the NFL. And the fact that this guy is a 3-year starter at tackle at that level of competition, that should give you a little bit of confidence about what's walking into the door at 1925 Giants Drive. The fact that the guy has played a lot of left tackle, more left tackle than any of the other guys selected in the first round last night, I mean, that's the thing that the Giants are looking at. This clearly signals to me that Dave Gettleman understands this is probably going to be the last year for Nate Solder. And after this season, Andrew Thomas is probably going to slide over to play left tackle, and you'll figure out the right tackle situation long term down the road. But as far as what they did, I don't know how you could be critical of it right now.
Well, I think you're critical because you haven't heard anything about Andrew Thomas. I mean, to your point, I mean, you usually take your cues off of, you know, all the mock drafts, you know, Mel Kiper's, you know, Todd McShay, you know, shout out to Todd McShay. Hope he's feeling better. Unfortunate, the timing of him dealing with COVID-19. That's kind of how you take your cues. I mean, you're listening to the Jordan Renans. You're breaking down mock drafts, and the fact that, you know, I just think we got into a situation, especially under the circumstances, with no pro days, kind of not as much chatter, not as many rumors, is that I think it was another situation where, you know, how the media saw it was a little bit different than how people inside of football saw it.
Yes.
And how much respect there was for Andrew Thomas, not only as a player, but as far as, you know, Andrew Thomas, the person. You know, everything I've heard about him is, the kind of kid he is. He's a really clean prospect, which is, I'm sure, something that, you know, Joe Judge really liked.
Pro Football Focus has a little stat about him. New Giants offensive tackle Andrew Thomas, Rick, hasn't allowed more than two pressures in a single game since 2017. And Sal Pal had a report last night. He said this has Joe Judge written all over it. He said, I don't know if you saw, he says he loved Andrew Thomas. He wanted them to take him. He kind of pushed for him to be taken. And did you see the conversation they had? He said, before you meet the media, here's the thing. I don't want to hear you mention Super Bowl. I want you to go out there and say how you can get better and how excited you are to be a Giant. And that's it. That's all I want to hear from you.
Well, yeah, I mean, you have to manage expectations from the fan base, and you also have to set the right tone about what your program is going to do and how it's going to be implemented. I think that's what Joe Judge is prioritizing. It doesn't do anybody any good for you to jump out there and start talking about Super Bowls right now. Everybody that's a fan of the organization, that covers the organization, they know that it's going to be a long road for the Giants to build it back to the point where you're competing consistently at the highest level. So it doesn't make any sense to go out there talking about it. The goal of winning a Super Bowl is obvious for every organization, but there's a process that you have to go through in order to accomplish that. And I like the head coach saying that to his first draft pick because it sets the right tone and it shows what Joe Judge is really going to be about. The fact that they're going after a guy that not only has a lot of productivity on the field, but that has that kind of character, that just tells you what Joe Judge wants his team to be about. And I think that's going to move the Giants closer to where we want them to be.
Yeah, I think you set the tone early. And as far as Andrew Thomas is concerned, I mean, as far as the offensive lineman taken in the first round, I mean, from everyone that I've talked to, he's the most NFL ready.
Yes. Like
he's a plug and play kind of guy from day one.
But yeah, because he played a lot in the SEC, Rick. I mean, DeBrickashaw Ferguson was the fourth overall pick for the Jets a little over a decade ago. And one of the things that people said about him when he was coming out was that he was a starter from the first day he stepped on campus. I mean, you had 4 years of watching him play at a high level in the ACC. I guess similar to what we got with Andrew Thomas. He's not a guy that's going to overwhelm you in terms of his size or his play strength, but he's going to be technically sound. He's fundamentally solid at the position, and even though he might not have the ceiling of a Becton or a Wirfs or a Wills, you know that he's probably got a higher floor than all those guys, especially if you're talking about wanting to play him at left tackle. Because when you start talking about the other three guys that were lumped in as the best offensive tackle prospects, you're projecting all of those guys playing left tackle. Most of the time that they had playing at the collegiate level was at right. That's not the case for Andrew Thomas.
Yeah, I mean, and what was he? He was All-American as a freshman, right?
Yep.
Right. I mean, right off the bat in 2017?
Yep.
So, I mean, he's the pedigree is there. He went up against, and I saw, is it Kirby Smart is the coach of Georgia?
Yeah, Kirby Smart.
Yeah, he was on.
Who was at Alabama, by the way.
Right. He was on, I don't know, so I can't even keep him straight at this point. Something either last night or this morning. He said, they asked me, is this 10 years left tackle? He said, no, he's not. He's 12 to 14 years left tackle. He said, you can put him there day one. And do not have to worry. He said, I'm telling you, he's gone up against the best of the best. He's done well against every single guy he's gone up against. Again, you can have your opinion. My only point, Rick, is I hope that if you have your opinion that you don't like to pick, that it's a formulated opinion and it's well formulated. Because if not, I don't want to hear about it.
Yeah, but I understand why you would not like to pick. Unless
but you didn't see all over the place? I mean, people were freaking out about it last night.
Well, that's because every mock draft you saw had Giants fans excited about Isaiah Simmons and the versatility. So, I mean, I get it. If you wanted a defensive player because your defense stinks and you felt like Isaiah Simmons should have been the guy, then you could be a little bit disappointed. But if you were expecting offensive line and that's what you wanted, you can't be upset about it. I mean, let's not forget, too. I mean, earlier on in this process, like really, really early on in this process, the best, I mean, when you look at the early mock drafts, the best available offensive lineman was going to be Andrew Thomas.
Mm-hmm.
He was the number one guy for a while. And then all of a sudden it started to change a little bit. But again, listen, we're not as qualified. I know there's some, you know, people that have jobs in the NFL, the NHL, the NBA, Major League Baseball that aren't really great at them. But for the most part, they're the most qualified people to make these decisions. And if they think that Andrew Thomas was the best available offensive lineman, then that's who it's going to be. I mean, offensive line is not sexy. Let's not get it twisted. It's not the sexiest pick. But I mean, as a Jets fan, go back and anyone you ask, you know, what's the most successful Jets draft we've had in a long time? It was the one where they took DeBrickashaw and Nick Mangold. I mean, that was a really successful draft that set the Jets up to have a ton of success.
It's hard to win in this league if you don't have good offensive linemen. That's it. Blanket
statement. Well, you only talk about it when you don't have it. Well, you talk about it when you don't have it, and you complain about it when you don't have it. Otherwise, you take it for granted when you do.
Look at the teams that did well this year. Look at the Niners had a good offensive line. The Chiefs had a good offensive line. The Titans had a good offensive line. I mean, the Texans traded two number ones to get an elite offensive lineman. You have to have good offensive line in this league to win. That's it, period.
No question about it, Dave. And if you have a good offensive line that's going to help Daniel Jones, that's going to help Saquon Barkley, if Giants fans are upset they didn't go with the defensive player at four, think about it this way. That offensive lineman is going to help that offense be better with the ground game control time of possession, which means your defense is not going to be on the field as long. Your defense is not going to be exposed. I think that this move makes sense on a lot of different levels. Andrew Thomas is going to make Daniel Jones and Saquon Barkley that much better. And right now, that's what you should be concerned with, because that is the future of your team for the next 3, 4, 5 years. So that's what Giants fans should look at when they're trying to evaluate this pick. I think this was the only direction for Big Blue to go in.
And by the way, Andrew Thomas will be on the K Show today at 4:00. Mekhi Becton 3:30. Adam Schefter on Barton Hahn at 1:30 today. Go ahead, Rick.
Dave, let's be completely honest too. And I hate to say this because I don't want to rain on your parade. But again, I think we know where the Giants are at. When you look at where the Eagles are at, what the Eagles just added, what the Cowboys just did, I mean, how bad your defense is that you're probably not going to win a ton of games. But if you are going to win games, it's going to be because you can score points.
It's an arms race in the NFC East. No question about it. It really is. Plus, you're going to need that offensive tackle to be pretty good, because I'm not sure if everybody paid attention to what the Redskins did with the second overall pick, but they added Chase Young to Montez Sweat, Ryan Kerrigan, Deron Payne, and Jonathan Allen. You're going to need a solid offensive line to contend against the defensive lines you're going against.
Look, Giants go fourth tonight. I don't know what they'll do, but if you told me you took the best center available, I wouldn't be upset about that even a little bit.
No, Dave, I mean, listen, you can turn a unit that was a weakness for the better part of this decade into a unit that's a strength for this team for the foreseeable future. I mean, how awesome would it be if you're talking about the Giants having three starters on your offensive line under the age of 25?
Be great.
That would be awesome. I mean, that's what you want. And especially when you're trying to develop a young quarterback, that's a unit that can grow with him. I mean, offensive linemen, if you hit on them, those guys are going to be around, you know, 8 to 10 years. So to me, it makes a lot of sense. And Dave Gettleman has talked about his football philosophy and the hog mileage and all of that stuff. We saw him put draft capital on the defensive line, but now we're starting to see him add significant draft capital on the offensive line. You had Will Hernandez a couple of years ago. Now you got Andrew Thomas. I just feel like it's moving in the right direction.
All right, let's go to some of the calls. 800-919-3776. We're really getting to the Jets selection as we move forward here as well. Renan at 11 o'clock, Samini at 12. We'll run through the entire first round from last night. A lot to do. A very busy football Friday for us and you, Chris, here on 98.7 ESPN. Let's go to Bruce in Manhattan. Bruce, lead us off. You're on 98.7 ESPN.
Hey, guys. First thing I want to say is that three guys in a football booth doesn't work. But you three together are a perfect combination. You all bring different things to the table. I think you're the best listener on the radio.
Wow, that's very nice. Thank you.
Sure. What I wanted to say is, of course, we heard the most about the other three tackles, but we heard virtually nothing about Andrew Thomas. All of the draft experts also felt that the other three were better choices. It's you guys seem to be very high on this choice. I'm high on the choice of a tackle, and but it's the safest choice isn't always the best choice. So I'm my question is, and you've answered it in your way, but why him above each one of the other three?
Because he was their favorite. I mean, you're going off of what you read and what was being, you know, mocked up in drafts. I mean, no one really knew. And I love the fact that no one knew who they thought the best offensive lineman was. They want at some point, if it's not this year, to be next year, for Andrew Thomas to step in and be your left tackle for the next, you know, 10 to 12 years. And he has the most experience at left tackle. He's had the most success at left tackle. I mean, he played at Georgia, going up against the best pass rushers in college football, and has had a ton of success. The fact that we haven't been talking about him, I mean, that's just because all of a sudden you started to hear buzz after the combine with, you know, Wirfs and what you saw from Wills, and then, you know, having a guy 6'7", 364 pounds, run a 5'1", 40. Here's the interesting thing, though. When you look at this year's draft and you break this thing down 3 to 5 years from today, this may end up being one of those drafts where you got a lot less failure than in the past, because this is strictly, you know, based more on what you've seen on their tape, as opposed to, you know, the kind of groupthink and being like overwhelmed with all the physical gifts and the underwear Olympics and everything else.
Yeah, I mean, Andrew Thomas is a safe pick from the standpoint that you've seen him do what you're going to ask him to do in the NFL at the collegiate level, at the highest level in college football.
Right.
So I think that's really what it comes down to. Like, for me, if you look at where the Giants went and where the Jets went with their pick, that's on opposite ends of the spectrum if we're talking about the offensive linemen that were available. To me, Andrew Thomas is the base hit. Mekhi Becton is swing for the fences and hope you hit a home run. Like, to me, that's how I see these two players. But as far as what the Giants are doing, I thought that this was a safe pick. And yeah, Andrew Thomas is not going to wow you. I don't think his ceiling is as high as the other three guys that were lumped into that group, but I believe that he has a higher floor. And for the New York Giants, that's exactly what you're looking for. You want as many solid football players as you can possibly find. We keep talking about how the Giants roster is so top heavy and how they don't have a lot of depth. This gives them an opportunity to have a solid to good offensive tackle for the next decade, and I don't know how you can turn down the opportunity to have that if you're Dave Gettleman.
Let's go to Mike in Parsippany. Mike, you're next up on 98.7.
Guys, good morning. How you doing?
What's going on, Mike?
Not too much. Hey, you guys seem to criticize Dave Gettleman a lot for his draft picks. I think his last couple, you know, other than picking Saquon where we did, and I think it was more about changing the complexion of the Giants with Odell Beckham to Saquon Barkley, I think his draft picks have panned out. I think
they've
been pretty solid. I mean, do you guys agree or no?
No. Mike, we don't agree. I mean, 3 years ago when you took a running back with the second overall pick, you didn't think that you were going to be a 5-win team. You took Saquon Barkley because you thought, hold on, Mike, I'll let you talk. You took Saquon Barkley because you thought that you were capable of making another playoff push in the twilight of Eli Manning's career. And then they realized that they weren't going anywhere fast, which is why the organization decided to pivot. But you can't sit here and tell me that that was the right decision. I mean, even though Saquon is a phenomenal player, you've burned 2 seasons of his career at the position in the NFL that probably has the shortest shelf life. That wasn't the right move.
No. As evidence, by last night, when you don't have a running back to go to 32 and you get stud running backs going to be available in the littered throughout the second round. Go ahead, Mike.
Yeah, listen. Hey, here's the thing, though, too. I mean, if you're going to draft a running back in the first round, I mean, you do it when you're the Kansas City Chiefs. That's when you do it. You do it with the last pick in the first round.
Yes. Yes.
That's when you do it.
Was it his decision or ownership saying, Eli, give him one more chance? What do you guys
think? It doesn't matter. He took the job with the understanding that ownership wanted him to go in that direction. If Dave Gettleman wanted to completely tear it down and move on from Eli Manning, he probably wasn't going to be the general manager. But since he did take the job, I am going to evaluate the moves based on what he does. I can care less about ownership and what they want to do because they're not going to change. But if your general manager doesn't do the job that they asked him to do, which is to actually produce in the way of wins, then I can be critical of him. And Dave Gettleman in his first couple of years as the Giants GM has a grand total of 9 wins. How can we say that Dave Gettleman has done a great job? Even the owner came out and said that Dave Gettleman needs to do a better job. How are we wrong for criticizing him?
And Mike, do you like what they've done in free agency?
I think the Leonard Williams thing was kind of BS. I think that was a stupid move, giving up what
they did. It was a terrible move. Do you like the Patrick Omame signing? I mean, you a fan of that? Nate Solder? I mean, listen, and I understand you might have been forced into Nate Solder, but there's not a lot of free agents that he's brought in that you love. I think the draft, he's been okay. I think free agency has been bad. Overall, Rick, I don't think he's done a very good job in 2-plus years here with the Giants.
Yeah, but here's the thing, and here's where I agree with the caller, is that I do think it was a mandate from ownership, was to try to win with Eli Manning. Here's where I'll criticize him a little bit. Knowing that going in, and that's the reason why you get the job, and most GMs don't get a second opportunity, is it's how now all of a sudden you choose to take what the owner told you to do and now put that into motion. So are you better served using the second overall pick on a running back, or are you better served trading down and addressing the offensive line with like a Quentin Nelson or the edge pass rush with a Bradley Chubb? It's like how you decide, you know, how are we gonna take Eli Manning where he's at in his career and get the best out of him? I would make the argument that you need to protect him. So I'd focus more on the offensive line. And if that meant, you know, trading down from 2 to do exactly what the Colts did and get Quentin Nelson and a couple other picks, I mean, that's probably what I would have done. That's where you start to criticize him. I mean, you can be told to do something, and it's now on you how you decide you want to get that done.
And the Colts got 2 starters on their offensive line as a result of that move. Quentin Nelson and Braden Smith.
Yeah, and they got Darius Leonard in that draft, too.
Yep.
The Giants could have traded down, gotten Quentin Nelson, and loaded up on draft picks. And another thing from last night is, I've seen them all over the place. Why did they not trade down? You know they wanted to trade down. I'm sure Thomas would have been there at 6 or 7. My assumption is, we'll talk to Renan at 11 o'clock, Chris, is that they could not trade back. That there was no one that was willing to give anything to move up to the 4 spot.
Well, I think that's really what it came down to. And Lions general manager Bob Quinn came out and said that there was some chatter around the 3rd overall pick, but a real offer never materialized. So if that was what happened at 3, I think it's safe to assume that's probably what happened at 4. And we were thinking that one of those 2 teams, whether it was the Dolphins or the Chargers, would want to move into the top 5. But that just didn't happen. They were comfortable sitting where they're at and letting the quarterbacks fall to them. So, yeah, if you're not going to get a real offer in terms of being able to get close to fair value for the pick, then it made sense to stay there and take your guy, Andrew Thomas. Why run the risk of your guy being taken by somebody else before you get on the clock?
A lot going on in the world of sports. We've touched on the Giants. I think we're all pretty sound, pretty solid with the Andrew Thomas pick at 4 overall. Spent a couple minutes on the Jets, and we'll kind of line up the phone calls. You know, I wanted the Jets to go after the offensive lineman. I thought it was important. They get the kid with the highest upside. He's a mountain of a human being. Rick, this is your team. So when they took Becton, your immediate thought was?
My immediate thought was I probably would have preferred Wills. That's just me.
You mean
but
worse.
I like the fact that I was hoping that Cleveland didn't take.
Oh, you were hoping that? Okay, gotcha.
Yes.
Gotcha.
No, at that point, I just had my fingers crossed that it would, you know, Wills would slide to us at 11. Didn't happen. And then the fact that I think with Wirfs, I mean, I love everything about the kid as far as what kind of athlete he is, especially if you read into, you know, what the kid did in high school and all. I mean, he's an unbelievable athlete. But I think there is a little bit of concern as to whether, I mean, he did play left and right tackle, but, you know, some people kind of projected him as maybe a better guard.
Well, don't you need guards too if you're the Jets?
Yeah, you do, but I think they were looking to address tackle and where Joe Douglas comes from. I mean, the size of Becton, you know, we kind of mentioned this to start the show, the ceiling of him was probably attractive to them at 11.
Yeah, I mean, listen, I think there's a lot to like when it comes to Becton. My only thing with him is because of his size, I know he's a great athlete, and he ran the 5.140. But what I'm concerned about is his short area quickness, change of direction when you're trying to keep up with those more athletic edge rush kind of guys. Now, the one thing I will say that will protect him in what the Jets are trying to do is they want to be a zone blocking team when it comes to the running game. With a zone blocking team, the offensive linemen, they're blocking an area. They're not blocking a man. So you don't have to worry about defensive linemen darting in and out of gaps. Like, he just has to keep on that same track. So I think when you start breaking down the rhyme and reason that Joe Douglas went this direction, it makes a lot of sense. My only thing is he going to be able to hold up one-on-one edge pass rush against the better athletes coming off the end in the NFL? That's the one thing that we won't have an answer to until they kick off.
My take is very similar to my take with the Giants. I mean, I think you have to trust your GM, and especially even more so with the Jets than with any other team, because you have no track record. You have no history, and what you've seen in free agency, you're pleased with. He's an offensive line guy. He comes from good, you know, tutelage and where he was prior to this as far as the draft and offensive line is concerned. I'm gonna sit back on this one. I'm gonna assume for the moment, like I am with the Giants, the Jets did well overall at number 11.
Yeah, I mean, that's the only approach that any of us can take, Dave. I just look at it and I say it. He's a huge man. He's 6'7", 360 pounds. But there aren't a whole lot of offensive linemen in today's game that can make it playing at tackle at that size. Like, we just don't see it. I mean, Trent Brown and Jason Peters, you're talking about something that's a bit of a unicorn, a bit of an outlier when it comes to ideal height, weight, speed at a certain position. Like, he's a huge guy, but I don't know if he's going to be able to use his size effectively at the next level. He's not going to be able to bully guys around like he did at Louisville. That's just, it's going to be different for him, and how he adjusts to that early on is going to determine whether or not they're going to be able to stay with him as a tackle.
Yeah, he's not a finished product. I'm going to be completely honest with you. I don't necessarily love the fact that, you know, headed into the biggest job interview of your life that you make, and he says it's a one-time thing, you make the decision to, you know, to smoke marijuana or whatever it was and get flagged at the combine. I think that's just pure stupidity. But, I mean, Joe Douglas must have felt comfortable after he talked to him, so they had a good conversation, that he was a good kid, had a good soul, he said, and there's, you know, a ton of potential. And they're going to have to coach him up a little bit, let's be honest. This is not Andrew Thomas. I mean, you're not just going to plug this kid in and just let him go play. He's going to need some work.
Absolutely, he will. Now, Chris, you had said yesterday that if it was Becton or Judy, you would have preferred the wide receiver. You would prefer they went with Judy overall at number 11 last night?
Yeah, I think Judy is going to be a stud out there in Denver, Dave. I think he's going to walk in and be the number one wide receiver day one. I just have that much belief in the kid based on what I've seen of him at Alabama. I mean, if you're talking about him coming out last year, he was going to be arguably the best wide receiver. So I think he's a unique talent. Becton is also a unique talent, but I think there is more bust potential with Becton than there is with Judy. And right now the Jets need as many solid football players as they can possibly find. I don't think there's going to be any in between with Becton. I think he's going to be either really, really good or he's going to be really, really bad. With Jerry Judy, I see a higher floor in terms of the productivity that he's going to give an NFL team.
All right, let's get to the calls. 800-919-3776, and we talk Jets, and that brings Ira from Staten Island onto the show. Ira, you're on 98.7, buddy.
Hey, Dave. Good morning, fellas. And, Dave, you're absolutely right. Andrew Thomas, solid pick. I talked to a bunch of Giant fans last night. Roof, but quite frankly, he got a real good, solid football player. Now you got to see what type of heart he has and how he gets coached up. And, you know, with Becton, yeah, absolutely. I think he got the highest ceiling out of all these guys coming out in the first round. Now he's got to get coached up, and he's got to put in the work. And if he gets coached up right and he puts in the work, the Jets got themselves a real good left tackle, hopefully for the next 10 years. But as we all know in the draft, okay, first rounders, most of the time, unless you come up with a bust, pretty much you're going to get a solid football player. Now for general managers, rounds 2 to 4, 2 to 5, this is where you have to make your bread and butter. And now Joe Douglas got to roll up his sleeves, get to work. Hopefully in the second round, they're going to go after Michael Pittman, the receiver from USC. I think he'll be available. I'd love to get him. He played with Donald in college. And then with the 2 third-round picks, you got a corner from Virginia named Bryce Hall. I think I'd grab him. And then I would debate whether I take Cushenberry to center or I look at Terrell Taylor, the pass rusher from Tennessee. You could flip a coin there. But overall, today is the big day. Now, last night was the gravy. Today's the work job. And I think Douglas, I think he's going to get the job done today.
Yeah, I think the biggest thing, though, and this is, I mean, just drafts in general and what makes it such a crapshoot and why I get it. I mean, it fascinates me sometimes when you hear people criticize picks and they're focused. I mean, when you say safe pick has the higher floor, people are like, well, what do you mean? What does that mean? Why would you make the safe pick? Why wouldn't you go with the higher ceiling? Well, because you know what? Sometimes that doesn't pan out, because the reality of drafting a player, a 21-year-old kid, is, yeah, you get a chance to talk to him. I mean, meet with him for a little bit. You're doing Zoom calls and everything else, but you don't know what's in his chest. You don't know what he's really made of until you get him in the building.
Well, here's the most important thing, Rick. When you start talking about those guys having a higher floor and being a safer pick versus going with the guy that has the biggest upside, you have to realize what the kid is walking into. Like, where are you in terms of a team building your program, developing your culture? And when it comes to the Jets and the Giants, they're at the infancy stages. So when you absorb a prospect that's a boom or bust guy, I mean, if you don't have the infrastructure put in place to properly develop the kid, then you're probably not going to be able to get him anywhere close to that ceiling, which is why we would tend to think that those organizations should try to get more base hits and go with safer players. But, I mean, here's the thing about the Jets, and this is my last word on it. Mekhi Becton, he's got a chance to be a really good football player. He addresses an area of need for the Jets. This entire offseason for them has been about Sam Darnold and trying to get him better. And with the investments that Joe Douglas has made in the offensive line and free agency and last night, it makes me feel good about where they're trying to get this thing to.
All right. Now, Booger McFarland, part of our draft coverage on ESPN television, they did a really, really good job last night with everything, all things considered. Booger was asked about his thoughts on Mekhi Becton, and here's what he said with the Jets pick at number 11.
To me, this is a great pick. We know how big he is. Reminds me a lot of Trent Brown with the way he's able to move at that size. But to me, this is all about Sam Darnold. You need a left tackle. You need to protect your franchise quarterback. And now the New York Jets have a guy that they can put out there, and Sam Darnold can know that his backside is protected.
Yeah, again, I like the pick. Would I have preferred Wirfs? Yeah, I think so. I'm okay with taking him over Judy and the upside of this kid. And again, it goes back to the fact that I need to trust Joe Douglas. I need to. He has a complete blank slate. I believe that he's going to be good. And if I believe that he's going to be good, then I'm going to give him the benefit of the doubt, even if it was someone I would prefer to take at 11 over Becton.
Well, that's the only choice you have. I mean, as far as, you know, what Mekhi Becton is now and what he could be, I mean, everyone that you talk to says that, you know, first of all, I mean, how many times have you heard this? You can't teach size. The guy's 6'7", 364 pounds.
Did you see his father?
Yeah, that was funny. I actually got a phone call from a buddy. He thought initially when they made the pick, because he was just thinking, he's not a huge football fan, but he was watching. He thought that the dad was Mekhi Becton at first.
The father's got to be bigger than the kid, doesn't he?
Oh, he's humongous.
The father must have been 450 plus.
Well, Mekhi Becton was close to 400. I mean, he's lost a ton of weight. Like, he finally committed himself to, you know, eating healthy and working out. I mean, when he got to Louisville, he was humongous. That was one of the concerns about him.
The strength coach said it was nasty. Yeah.
I think they said it was gross watching him after this first practice.
No, but Dave, here's the thing though, and I think to Chris's point, and I think I agree with it, is that the reason why you would kind of, especially under these circumstances, you would, you know, err on the side of the more polished prospect, is because part of whoever you draft reaching their ceiling, that's not only on you as an organization. It's also up to the player to do whatever it takes to reach that ceiling. And that can be dicey sometimes, because you don't know how the kid's going to react to, you know, being in the NFL now and having all this money. You know what I mean? Like, it's
not to mention being in New York City.
Exactly right. I mean, that
could
scare you.
I think he's never been to New York also, right?
Yeah.
I wouldn't doubt it. So that's kind of why I was hoping that, you know, Cleveland would make a different pick and Wills would be sitting there for us at 11. And I think why Chris loves Jerry Jeudy. I mean, look at the track record of the wide receivers that have come from Alabama recently. Mm-hmm. Between Julio Jones, Amari Cooper, Calvin Ridley. The fact that the kid's the best route runner. You're hearing some of the stuff during the draft. I mean, he's a straight A student in high school. He ends up getting a B+ and got pissed. So he went back to the teacher. This is wrong. This is supposed to be an A. And they give him an A. Like, that's, I mean, those are little things. And then you on top of that, you put on the tape and watch what he's able to do. I mean, that's what, I mean, really what made the 11th pick so interesting is that, are you going to take, I mean, clearly the biggest need is if offensive tackle, but if you're sitting there and it's your, you know, second or third rated offensive tackle, and Jerry Jeudy sitting on the board still? I mean, that's not an easy decision.
Well, we talked about that the entire time leading up to the draft last night, Rick. We said that, okay, there's a chance that the Jets could have one of those highly rated tackles still on the board, although it might not be the top tackle on their board, and you're probably going to have Jerry Jeudy or CeeDee Lamb be available. We said that that could be the scenario that Joe Douglas finds himself in, and the question was, what is he going to do? And you saw he stuck true to his football philosophy, which is building the team through the trenches, the offensive and defensive line. And so, yeah, I mean, I would have preferred to go with Jeudy or Wirfs, but at this point, I guess you have to give Joe Douglas the benefit of the doubt. You have to wait and see what he does. This is his first draft pick. But again, when you're talking about the most important needs for the team, it was clearly at the tackle position. So I can't beat up Joe Douglas and the Jets for doing what they did last night.
Let's go to Ron in Hillsboro.
Dave, yeah, quickly, before you go to the call. You know what's crazy about the first round of this draft? And tell me if you guys felt the same way. You didn't have, everyone's calling, Field Yates, everyone's calling for chaos and everything else. And you pretty much early on start to see it's everyone you expected. It's Chalk.
Yep.
But then just look at the first round of this year's draft. Outside of maybe, I didn't love Atlanta's pick. I thought they reached with that pick. But for the most part, it feels like everything each team, like the position that every team needed, and the guy they just kind of just fell right to where they right to where they were picking.
Yeah.
Except for the Raiders at 19. I don't know what the hell my mail was doing with that one.
Well, they took the other corner either. From Ohio State.
Yeah, I have no idea what that was at
people
all.
People destroyed that. That was a strange one.
Yeah, that was a little bit of a head scratcher.
But for the most part, you're right. I mean, teams that had specific needs and players had been mocked to them leading up to the draft, for the most part, had opportunities to get those guys. You're 100% right.
It almost like it just like was meant to be. I mean, look at Tampa. I mean, they trade up one pick. Wirfs is just sitting there right for them.
Yeah.
And then what San Francisco does? They trade away DeForest Buckner.
And they get a new one.
He wants too much money. And they get a new one.
Right.
It's a hell of a story about Javon Kinlaw too, isn't it? About having to ride the Metro just so he wouldn't be outside in the cold. It's unbelievable, man.
Oh, Dave, by the way, the answer to your question that you were asking off the air, that was Jordan Love, actually.
Oh, the story that
about his
felt
dad.
Unnecessary?
Yeah, that was Jordan Love.
Yeah. No, I mean, I'll say it on the air. It's fine. I mean, they did all these sad stories. I think the first one was with Ruiz, the center that was taken by the Saints, and I like that pick as well, about how his dad was with them on the side of the road and got hit by a car that drove by, didn't stop, and just went on. And I think he was 8 years old. They had a lot of those stories. And they had one which, I don't know, guys, it just felt like it was way too much. And that was Jordan Love, like you mentioned, and his dad, I guess, committed suicide. But they went into deep detail on the suicide and read part of the obituary and wanted it to be fully understood that it was because of blood pressure medicine that he was taking. I don't know. To me, and I'm not saying that it's 100% wrong, but to me, it felt like it was a little bit too much on that story.
Yeah, probably a little bit too much, but I mean, they want to give you some insight into, what made these prospects who they are and why some of them play. You know what I mean? Like, I mean, why that, all the different motivations, what drives you?
Yeah,
you have the story of Jerry Jeudy. I mean, he plays for his sister. I mean, you have Jeff Okuda who he's playing for
his
mom.
His mom passed away, right? That was it. Did you ever read the letter he wrote to his mother?
Yeah, I mean, these are all things that go into making the NFL what it is, though. I mean, that's why the NFL is so smart, because now all of a sudden you get emotionally attached to these kids. That's what made last night so awesome and why you loved watching it. First of all, you don't know what's going to happen. It kind of fell flat a little bit early because it just felt like there wasn't much going on. Who you thought was going to get picked ended up getting picked. There wasn't as much excitement, but just what the draft stands for. I mean, even going into some of these kids' houses and seeing, where they come from,
mm-hmm.
Humble beginnings. I mean, you mentioned Kinlaw, him being homeless, all these different things. And then all of a sudden now they're first round draft picks making millions of dollars. It's incredible.
It's really a wonderful, wonderful night. And I thought it was even more so last night because of the lack of sports that we've had. And the ratings will come out later, and I have a feeling they're going to be unbelievable. I want to remind you, you can listen to us anywhere. Just click listen live at ESPNNewYork.com. Find 98.7 ESPN on the ESPN app or the TuneIn app, or simply tell your smart speaker, play ESPN New York at 98.7 ESPN New York. We go where you go. 800-919-3776. We're going to go to Ron in Hillsboro, and then we'll get to Andy for our questions. Ron, you're next up on 98.7.
Hi, guys. First time caller, long time listener, and I love the show. However, as a Giant fan, I'm not in love with the pick, nor am I in love with Gettleman at all. A couple of weeks ago, he made a comment about offense scoring points, defense wins games. He had Isaiah Simmons sitting there for the taking, passed on him. I would have taken Isaiah Simmons. And in the second round, do my due diligence and find a good offensive tackle. There's still plenty of them out there.
No one of the level of Andrew Thomas, though. No one even close to that.
I agree. But they still could have had a generational linebacker slash safety slash LT clone in the making.
Now stop it. Stop. You were fine. You were doing beautifully. You were rolling along. You wanted Simmons. I can't even argue with that. I like Thomas. You wanted Simmons. But you're going to start to bring Lawrence Taylor into the conversation here? Come on.
Yeah, I disagree with that. I don't think he's Lawrence Taylor.
Nobody's Lawrence Taylor.
I mean, he's a physical freak. I think he's a faster Cam Chancellor. He's got really good ball skills. But I mean, look at your defense. I mean, you already burned 2 years of Saquon Barkley. How many more years are you going to burn of Saquon Barkley? How many years would you burn of Isaiah Simmons with what that defense is right now? It's not like all of a sudden you plug in Isaiah Simmons and you got a great defense. I mean, you're pieces away on the defensive side of the ball.
You're probably 3 to 4 pieces away on that defense, like real pieces away from being a good defense.
I mean, when you take a step back and just evaluate the most important positions as it pertains to winning in the NFL, linebacker isn't one of them, guys. I mean, you're talking about quarterback, edge rusher, offensive tackle, corner, and wide receiver. And if it's not one of those positions, then I'm not passing up the opportunity to shore up the offensive line and protect my young franchise quarterback. So I don't understand how you could be critical of what the Giants did last night. It just doesn't make any sense.
Let me ask you a quick question. Now, this may not be a good question, but I've asked plenty of bad questions in my life. If I would ask you right now, Chris and Dave, who would you rather have, the Honey Badger or Chris Jones? Who would you say?
Chris Jones.
Okay, and I mean, Isaiah Simmons said that he considers himself, you know, similar to Tyrann Mathieu. I mean, that's not necessarily what the Giants need at this point.
Yeah, I don't. Yeah, whether it's safety or linebacker doesn't matter. I'm not prioritizing that over offensive tackle.
No, especially when you see the drop off. I mean, you're talking about from the top four to, you know, Austin Jackson, there's a lot of questions.
Yes.
So now what are you going to get in the second round? I mean, you have an opportunity.
The Giants needed a plug-and-play starter at tackle. They had to have that. They could not go into the season with Cam Fleming being their starting right tackle.
No.
So they had to find somebody that could be a day-one starter, and Andrew Thomas, since his freshman year, was a starter at tackle for the University of Georgia, the SEC, which is the best competition in college football. So I don't understand why we want to nitpick Andrew Thomas because we didn't get a chance to draft Isaiah Simmons, a guy that we don't know how he would fit with the defensive coordinator Patrick Graham's scheme. Like, it just doesn't make any sense to me. You knew you need offensive linemen. You got an offensive lineman. How could you be upset at this?
Because this is what people do. All right, let's bring
him in. Because no one saw it on a mock draft. You know why? You're asking the question. You know exactly why.
Because people are surprised. Oh, wait, that wasn't the expected selection. So now I'm gonna, you know what, all over it.
Exactly right. I mean, unless you're breaking down tape and you're actually, you know, a huge college football fan watching these guys on a consistent basis, you're going off of what you read. And everything you read was Isaiah Simmons or it was Tristan Wirfs.
Wirfs or Wills, yeah.
So you're surprised. Yep. And now you feel like, oh, well, how come I didn't see this coming? Well, because it's not your job.
You know, that's good. And you mentioned it earlier. I'm glad I didn't see this coming.
I think it's a positive, to be completely honest, that they were able to keep it quiet.
And I wonder how much Joe Judge had to do with keeping this thing quiet. Because in the past, Gettleman was not very good at keeping things quiet.
No, him or Shurmur. I mean, it's a breath of fresh air to have your head coach call up the prospect and say, hey, listen, just when you talk to the media, you know, let's under-promise, over-deliver. Like, let's not talk about Super Bowls and everything else, all right?
And he mentioned Daniel Jones, too.
I don't need a Ron Hainsey situation where he's quarterbacking the power play for the Montreal Canadiens, all right?
All right, let's go to Andy in Merrick. Andy, we know you've got some beautiful questions on this draft Friday. Good morning, Andy.
Good morning, guys. You've been red hot all week. Let's see if you can continue. Chris, going back to your 2005 draft, staying on the defensive side of the ball, which draft pick ended up with the most career interceptions?
Most career interceptions.
From the 2005 draft.
Andy, I'm going to tell you, I know I don't know this one.
If I told you that he ended up being a teammate of yours, would that help?
Ooh.
Ended up being a teammate of mine. That is interesting.
You were never with Pac-Man Jones, right?
No, I know exactly who it is. I know exactly who it is. He likes to dance. He was in the secondary for Big Blue around my last time being there, my last years there.
University of Miami.
Yeah, Antrell Rowe.
Antrell Rowe.
Nicely done.
Very well done. Very well done.
All right, Rick, your Jets question. Since 2000, the Jets have drafted two players from Penn State. One, infamously, Christian Hackenberg. Who was the other one?
Since 2000, I mean, yep. Hackenberg. Penn State.
Mm-hmm.
Let me think.
Blair Thomas was pre-2000, right?
That was pre-2000, yeah.
No.
I feel like there's a reason why you asked me this question. It has something to do with... Is the reason why you asked me this question is because this guy was an offensive lineman?
He was an offensive lineman.
I'm going to go with Kareem McKenzie.
You are correct.
Nice. And where did he win a Super Bowl, Andy?
He made
see,
as well.
Andy, you're diabolical like that. See, I put two and two together. I see what you're doing because this is why you're so good at what you do and we keep the segment going. Because they drafted an offensive lineman with the 11th pick, you try to tie that into your question.
Save DiPietro.
He won a Super Bowl, right? Kareem McKenzie, Andy?
He was
Yeah, he was on the team.
What team? He was on the Giants.
Yeah, he was on the Giants.
Yeah. He was with us. Canty teammate.
Yeah, right. He was with us.
That worked that well.
Love this guy.
All right, Giants.
Oh, here we go.
University of Alabama has worked out okay for the Giants. Dalvin Tomlinson, Landon Collins. But can you tell me the last time the Giants drafted an offensive player from the University of Alabama?
An offensive player from the University of Alabama? Oh, we're going back a ways then.
It's a few years back, yes, sir.
Chris, do you know this? An offensive player from Alabama.
I'm thinking.
Ask Chris that. Chris isn't even 40 yet. You going to ask him to go back in time? Stop.
And we're going way back. I mean, I remember they took Tim Carter, but he's Auburn.
Well, that's not Alabama, Dave. Come on, you can do this.
I know, but they're tremendous rivals.
I'm just thinking about SEC players that played for the Giants.
We're going way back then.
Not that far back.
We got to be going 90s, no?
He's primarily in the 90s was his career, correct?
Oh, my goodness. I'm going to be the one that's going to let us down. Is it a tight end?
Oh, boy. It is a tight end.
Oh, here we go.
Is it the guy
on,
with
Dave.
Some really unfortunate hands and a better blocker?
Howard Cross, you got
Howard
it, my man.
Cross.
Three
Howard
for three Cross. Today, guys. Fantastic job. Stay
I am the smartest man alive!
Nicely Fantastic. Done, Dave.
Fantastic job. Fantastic job by all three of us.
DiPietro, Canty, and Rothenberg. Weekdays at 10 on 98.7 ESPN.